Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, January 29th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemire.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The European Union is next week expected to resume direct aid to the Zimbabwe government after a 13-year hiatus.
We hope that some of the programs can start immediately because we have, of course, started preparing this whole process months ago. So we hope that we will have some programs which we can start up immediately.
Some Gweru residents hold a peaceful demonstration in the Midlands capital against what they say is council's insensitivity on hardships faced by locals.
Residents of Gweru are only pleading with the council that, look here, we are failing to pay whatever is there, and you are actually proposing to increase the tariffs by 35%. It's not workable. There is this problem of liquidity crunch.
And Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe says, although the African Union's theme for its summit in Ethiopia this week is women empowerment, it is impossible for women to be at par with men politically because of their biological role of bearing children.
The European Union is next week expected to resume direct aid to the Zimbabwe government after a 13-year hiatus. The 28-member EU bloc is expected to sign a $266 million national indicative program with Harare to fund a number of projects that include health and the constitutional alignment. The EU in 2002 suspended direct funding to the Harare government, accusing it of electoral fraud and human rights abuses. But Harare says the EU imposed the sanctions on the country after Zimbabwe embarked on its land reform program by seizing land from the minority whites and giving it to the majority blacks.
Last year, the EU suspended sanctions on eight of Zimbabwe's most powerful military and political figures, but kept them on President Robert Mugabe and his wife, Grace, in a cautious easing of its policy. EU Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Philip Van Damme, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the deal will be sealed soon with Harare to support government programs.
The exact timing of the signature has still to be convened with the government, but basically within that program we have three main sectors of concentration: governance, both political and economic governance, including public finance management on the economic side and constitutional alignment. We have a second sector of concentration which is agriculture, and the third one which is health.
So when are you likely to resume the funding?
We will sign somewhere early February. The formal adoption by the European Commission will be done tomorrow. So we have just to convene of an appropriate date, with convening date for all parties here in Harare, somewhere early February. If it's not next week, it will be the week after next week probably, to sign up. And we hope that some of the programs can start immediately because we have, of course, started preparing this whole process months ago, so we hope that we will have some programs which we can start up immediately, notably one support program to the health transition fund for something like $50 million now. I know that the euro is weakening, but something like that. And then a couple of government programs which we think could start very quickly as well. And then other programs will start a little bit later in the year.
There are still some ambassadors who are concerned that not much has actually changed in Zimbabwe, and they are surprised why the EU is engaging the government at this juncture.
Well, we are engaged with the government because we believe that policy dialogue may help changing this environment towards a more conducive environment for development and for the consolidation of democracy.
That was EU Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Philippe Van Damme, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
But political analyst Rashid Mukundu, a board member of the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, tells Blessing that the EU must not give Harare a blank check.
The concern, I think, from a civil society perspective, is that any support to the Zimbabwean government must be clearly tied to tangible and achievable steps with regard to the respect and observance of constitutional governance. More so, the steps that ZANU-PF is taking to realign the current or existing laws with the new constitution, respect for political freedoms, respect for human rights generally. I don't foresee ZANU-PF immediately responding on these issues. So from a civil society perspective, the other concern then is that there appear to be some desperation on the part of the EU to normalize relations with the ZANU-PF government without tangible change being noted on the ground. So the concern remains that any support to the ZANU-PF government must be done in a manner that ultimately benefits the citizens of this country.
But in response to that, the ambassador is saying that the bloc has seen it fit to engage Zimbabwe because their argument is that they can only change things if they are directly involved as opposed to not engaging at all.
It's a plausible argument if you are looking from an outside perspective that they have limitations to the extent to which they can change the political setup in Zimbabwe. But what we are saying is that in their discussions with the ZANU-PF government, let them put things down on paper that these are benchmarks that need to be observed or targets that need to be met in the democratization of Zimbabwe.
That was political analyst Rashid Mukundu, a board member of the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Meanwhile, a visiting French business delegation has demanded clarity on Zimbabwe's empowerment law, saying they want to invest in a risk-free environment. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera has more detail from Harare.
Head of delegation Gerald Wolf told journalists that while conditions for investments have improved in Zimbabwe, they need guarantees that their investments would be safe in the country.
We want to be sure that conditions are met to have a non-risky investment, because at the end of the day, this is it for a business. Business has to be in a de-risky environment.
But emerging from a meeting with President Robert Mugabe and Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa at State House, Wolf said they had secured some of the guarantees.
We got some insurance on that. This is good news. And now we're going to work with our counterparts from the Zimbabwean companies in order to prepare the future of this country.
He said French companies are looking for long-term partnerships in Zimbabwe, hence the need for guarantees on their investments. Chinamasa noted that Zimbabwe remains open to investment and government was doing everything to create a conducive environment to attract investment from all over the world. He said government would soon come up with clear, consistent and predictable policies.
Changes that affect the original decision adversely should be avoided. So we have committed ourselves, and the discussions were excellent with His Excellency, that with respect to the indigenization policy, we are very clear. The resource-based sector is a different story and should be treated strictly as the 51.49%.
French Ambassador to Zimbabwe Laurent Delahousse said Zimbabwe also needed to be clear on the issue of property rights in order to attract foreign direct investment.
There are issues around property rights in Zimbabwe, and there again, foreign investors need clarification from the government of Zimbabwe.
Lack of clarity on the country's empowerment law and rampant violation of property and other rights by the state have been cited as some of the major stumbling blocks in attracting foreign investment. Several business delegations from Europe have visited Zimbabwe to explore investment opportunities in the country, but have raised concern over the lack of clarity on the empowerment law. The law compels foreign-owned companies to transfer majority stakes to local people. There have been conflicting reports on the revision of the indigenization law in government corridors, with some ministers claiming that the piece of legislation will apply on a company basis. But some ministers have dismissed these suggestions, saying the law is not being applied by line ministries that have different empowerment thresholds. The 10 companies which are represented in the French delegation have an annual turnover of $100 billion and employ 500,000 people globally. Some of the major French companies operating in Zimbabwe are Fuel Giant Total and cement producer Lafarge. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe says although the African Union's theme for its 24th AU summit in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia this week is women empowerment, it is impossible for women to be at par with men politically because of their biological role of bearing children. Responding to questions from VOA Studio 7's Sandra Nyaira on what he would do as the new chairman of the African Union if elected at the weekend to further the cause of women on the continent, Mr. Mugabe said, "It is ideal to have women at all levels of society in decision-making positions, but not easy as most women tend to drop out of politics once they start having families." The African Union has declared 2014 the year of empowering women, as this year the world marks 20 years since the Beijing Conference on Women. Let's hear more of Mr. Mugabe, the current Southern African Development Community Chair and Deputy AU Chairperson's thoughts on the issue of having more women in positions of authority.
When it comes down to the ground, it's not easy for them. They get married. They must have babies. That's the problem.
So what
do you... what we get normally, those who argue women who are single or divorced, here and there you get one or two who are married, provided it's easy constituents or something.
In other words, you're saying as women, we should choose whether we want to have families or to be in politics?
No. Oh. I'm saying it's not possible that women can be on a par with men. You see, women, we want children. We make the very women we want in parliament pregnant. Yes, and we remain it. But it's not possible. That aspect only. We leave it to the women. If they give us the numbers, that will bring about the balance fine. But the treatment generally of women, yeah. Equal pay for equal work. And even as they get, pregnant, they must be paid if they are employed. They must be paid for that period and not for companies or government to say, we will give you only 3 months. It must be 9 months, right?
Okay.
Things like that. No, we are very sure. We will have to send you to Europe because they are not doing anything about women as our missionaries. and get them to sit up to say, why is that you don't have enough women in your parliaments? You started long ago and you talk about gender to us. Don't talk about gender to us. We talk about gender to ourselves.
And that was President Robert Mugabe responding to questions from Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira on the AU's 2015 summit theme of empowering women.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
a closer look at the African Union summit in Ethiopia, focusing on women empowerment.
A But first, a look at regional and international news.
Malaysia Airlines has formally declared the disappearance of last year's flight MH370 to be an accident, meaning the 239 people aboard the flight are now presumed dead. While the ruling sounds stark after nearly a year of searching for the plane that could not be found, it has a practical effect. Families of the victims may now apply to the airline for compensation.
Jordan says it will not release an Iraqi female terrorist until it receives proof a Jordanian pilot held by Islamic State militants is still alive. A Jordanian government spokesman, Mohammed Al-Moman, said on Thursday authorities will consider exchanging the female suicide bomber, Sajida Al-Rishawi, for the pilot, Mutal Al-Kasab, once they receive the proof of life that they asked for.
Some Gweru residents today held a peaceful demonstration in the Midlands capital against what they say is council's insensitivity on hardships faced by locals. Our correspondent Taurai Shaba has more details.
More than 40 local people carrying placards and singing revolutionary songs marched in Ascot and Mamba high-density suburbs before converging at the local authority's revenue office in Mutapa. The demonstrators, calling for the Gweru City Council to stop the proposed rate increases and a reversal of its decision to refer defaulting ratepayers to debt collectors, also denounced corruption, which they claimed was almost crippling the city. The residents did not name the council administrators allegedly involved in corrupt activities, saying the local authority was not catering for their needs. Chairperson Cornelia Selipiwe of the Gweru Residents and Ratepayers Association told Studio 7 residents are angry that the proposed rate increases of up to about 35% will seriously affect their families as they are living from hand to mouth.
Residents of Gweru are only pleading with the council that, look here, we are failing to pay whatever is there, and you are actually proposing to increase the tariffs by 35%. It's not workable. There's this problem of liquidity crunch. There's no viability money to actually spend. So people are saying, instead of taking us to debt collectors, why don't we sit down and come up with a payment plan?
Selipiwe said it is surprising that council intends to hike rates and tariffs when ratepayers are struggling to pay the current charges. A resident who identified herself only as Miss Wungwe echoed the same sentiments, adding that council owes its workers several months' wages, so the city fathers must understand that times are tough for ordinary people. Another resident, Duanke Nukarume, also complained about the council's position on cutting off water supplies to defaulting ratepayers.
Some of us had our water supply disconnected. Our children no longer use toilets as we have no water. They now relieve themselves anywhere. Even some adults are doing the same. They relieve themselves in the streets or the drains. Human waste is piling up everywhere, and this can cause disease. Council cannot solve the problem of defaulters by cutting off water supplies.
The demonstration is the second this month, after another one that was staged 2 weeks ago by some Koba residents over similar concerns. Selipiwa said most residents who owe council thousands of dollars are willing to enter into payment agreements with the council, but claimed that some council officials are not willing to make such arrangements.
What we are saying is that if they are going to come up with a payment plan that is workable, that is a win-win situation, we'll accept that.
Studio 7 was not able to get a comment from Gweru Mayor Mtendi Kombai, who was said to be busy attending to various issues. But during the demonstration that the residents staged a fortnight ago, Kombai promised that council would meet and adopt a resolution to give defaulting residents an opportunity to make payment arrangements with council rather than refer them to debt collectors. As the country's economy continues to experience problems, most councils in Zimbabwe are finding themselves clashing with residents who are finding it difficult to pay rates and tariffs. Reporting for Studio 7 from Gweru, this is Taurai Shaba.
Former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai today visited Epworth in the outskirts of Harare to assess the living conditions of people in the settlement. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Mr. Tsvangirai, who was accompanied by his party secretary general Douglas Monzora and organizing secretary Abednego Bebe, among other top officials, visited three residential areas, namely Solani, Overspill, and Pentagon, where he spoke with Epworth residents. One of the residents, Lillian Maposa, told the opposition leader that the major problem faced by many inhabitants of Epworth is the shortage of decent accommodation and lack of jobs for the youth.
Pekugara chaipo dambudziko ririmo nerekuti dzimba chaidzo vamwe vakango vakadzimba zvezvidina dzinge dzakatodona.
Most people do not have roofs over their heads after government demolished some houses last year. We have families that are living in the open, and the shacks that some of the affected people had erected are now being destroyed by the rains that keep pounding.
For its part, government is urging all its citizens to erect their houses at designated stands, while its crackdown on illegal structures was stopped by the High Court last year, which ordered authorities to provide alternative accommodation before destroying people's homes. Another Epworth resident, Shelton Java, said many inhabitants risk losing their lives because of poor sanitation facilities.
People are living in the Jacha stream, are in trouble of diarrhea. We are now afraid of cholera. Yeah, in terms of the rain is now falling and it's now too much of rain.
Meanwhile, Mr. Tsvangirai says what is urgently needed to address problems faced by the Epworth community is for authorities to decide on the jurisdiction of the local board.
What has happened and what has been confirmed is that people taking the law into their own hands to settle themselves. It actually illustrates the extent of housing shortage. So you can't say munareka pakake omtichivamo and on. What you can do as a government and as a responsible authority is to provide facilities.
He said his party would also source funds to drill boreholes in Epworth in order to ensure that local residents have access to clean water. The former Prime Minister said the problems faced by the Epworth residents, like all other Zimbabweans, were being caused by what he described as a caught, clueless government that has turned the country into a vending economy where more than 85% of the people are unemployed.
I mean, which country have you seen which actually survives on vending? I'm saying vending is ancillary and auxiliary to the main economy, and the main economy is driven by industry, by mining, by investment.
He also renewed his call for his supporters to refrain from violence, even in the face of provocation, in order to promote peace and stability in the country. Reporting for Studio 7 from Epworth, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
As reported earlier on, President Robert Mugabe is likely to assume the chairmanship of the African Union this week. The AU is tackling issues like the militant Boko Haram currently terrorizing Nigeria, the Ebola crisis, and attempts to improve the lives of women. For perspective, reporter Tatenda Gumbo speaks to chairman of the ZANU-PF UK province, Nick Mangwana, and political consultant Charles Mangongera.
On the Boko Haram crisis that we are having in Nigeria, thousands of people have been killed, hundreds more have been abducted, you know, young girls and young children. But the response that we have seen so far from the African Union is that of ambivalence in terms of how to deal with that situation. I would have expected by now that the African Union would have had an emergency crisis summit to deal with that situation. But what we saw was sort of, you know, disjointed responses coming from the continent. So I think that Mr. Mugabe is coming into the chairmanship at a time when the continent is facing a number of challenges, and I don't know that he's up to the task.
Mr. Mangwana, your take on that issue. Also, as Mr. Mangongera is pointing out, the issue that the AU has a myriad of issues that they need to deal with and take care of. Would this be possible under the leadership of President Mugabe?
Mr. Mangongera mixed it up a bit. Initially, he said the occupier of the office doesn't really matter.
which I totally agree with him. The issue is about capacitating the African Union to solve the problem that Africa has, which is where the biggest problem is. The occupier of that office is inconsequential. Institutions run Africa, not an individual. As I pointed out, that you might not even recall who President Mugabe is taking over from. Over the years, African chairmen have had the tendency of appointing eminent persons for each conflict point, for each pressure point. For example, whatever is happening in Nigeria, the African Union could possibly appoint President Mbeki to be the point person, could also appoint any of the eminent people, Chissano or whoever, to be the point person. You don't physically need to be jumping and hopping from place to place as a chairman. A chairman, you just chair the meeting. You just chair the organ. But it's your vision and direction that's needed. And still, President Mugabe remains a visionary. He doesn't need to be jumping on from one plane to another to go to conflict points. He has the intellect. He's still intellectually astute. As long as that is there, that's all you need.
Mr. Mangongera, looking at the larger picture of the African Union, there are so many questions about its capacity, as what Mr. Mangwana was just talking about. The questions that itself as a body, is it able to tackle these issues? Because looking at even the response of Ebola, some were even criticizing the AU, saying that it didn't do what it was mandated.
Look, I think that, yes, we can focus on the various challenges that we are highlighting, including the Ebola crisis, including Boko Haram, and so on and so forth. But, you know, the biggest challenge that Africa faces today is that of, you know, a ruling class which is detached from the citizen. In most African countries, you have, you know, rising inequality between those who are the beneficiaries of the independent case and the rest of the citizens. And if you look across the continent, there is increasing resentment, you know, towards those that are ruling or those that are leading.
Mr. Mangwana, looking at the issues such as inequality, this year the African Union is focusing on the empowerment of women. How important is that, as if we're looking at some of these issues?
The country with the highest number of female composition in parliament is Rwanda, and Zimbabwe is still even better than Britain. Most Western world do not come anywhere near most African countries. And as we can recall, that Liberia had a female president, Malawi had a female president. Not many countries, especially the Western powers, can brag of the same thing. It's a process, it's not an event. It's going to take a while. We started the journey. Yes, we've started the journey.
And that was political analyst Charles Mangongera. I also heard from Nick Mangwana, ZANU-PF chairman of the UK province. And they were all talking to Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo.
The international organization Human Rights Watch says world governments make a serious mistake when they sacrifice human rights in the name of tightening security measures. In its annual review of global human rights released Thursday, the group said Nigeria, Iraq, Syria, Israel, and the United States are among the nations using security concerns to justify the violations of human rights. For perspective on Zimbabwe, Studio 7's Ndimiyake Nwakalele reached Dewama Vinga, Human Rights Watch senior researcher, Southern Africa.
We have seen in 2014 the displacement of some 20,000 from Chokwe Mkosi Dam Basin following a flooding in February 2014. So we are calling upon President Mugabe and his government to prioritize respect for human rights. And we're saying that as Mugabe is the chair of the Southern African Development Community Summit, he has a greater responsibility to ensure protection of human rights in Zimbabwe. And if, as expected, he becomes the AU chair for a year, it raises even higher the bar for human rights respect in Zimbabwe and across Africa. We are concerned about the rising terrorism and terrorist groups across Africa, including Boko Haram in Nigeria, as well as Al-Shabaab in Somalia and Kenya.
The report seems to indicate that a lot of the human rights violations are done in the name of national security. Can you expound on that?
Yes, that is the challenge, that human rights have been subordinated to consideration, so-called, as the government's belief of stability, national security. And what we're saying is that sustainable stability and national security is dependent upon enjoyment and respect for human rights. So these are false arguments that these governments across Africa and globally are. And we're urging that they see the reality and the truth.
That was Dewama Vinga, Human Rights Watch senior researcher, Southern Africa, speaking with Studio 7's Ndimiyake Nwakalele from South Africa.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our Women's Roundtable hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about the African Union Summit, whose theme is Women Empowerment.
And now to recap today's top stories.
The European Union is next week expected to resume direct aid to the Zimbabwe government after a 13-year hiatus.
Some Gweru residents hold a peaceful demonstration in the Midlands capital against what they say is council's insensitivity.
That's our broadcast this evening. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a good evening.